Thank you very much, Don Kleppen. Wait, did you give the barometric pressure? I was so looking forward to that.
Oh, you know, something. About, I knew I was forgetting something.
Just because I'm not Hochberg, you know, 10:30, all right?
Yeah, I didn't hear the whip crack, and I didn't hear anybody shout in my headphones, so that's why I forgot.
Hey, everyone, this is John Hansen. I am not David Hochberg. We're doing a little switcheroo here today because of Northwestern basketball. This show you're about to hear is called Let's Get Legal. It's powered by the Illinois State Bar Association, and we're going to take you to Northwestern basketball at 11:45. What we do on this show is we take big stories locally, things that impact your life, and we look at everything through a legal lens. But we encourage a lot of audience participation, just like Hochberg in Home Sweet Home Chicago. So the number is 312-981-7200. And I love we already have a picture of a cracked sink asking David and the crew what to do. So tell you what, I'll ask my lawyers a little bit later on. I'll show them this picture. We'll just give our own advice. And if you want to text David some legal questions later on, too, we'll have his experts. We'll have MegaPros Joe try and answer the legal questions as well. We'll have a little fun throughout the day today. So we'll look at everything from a legal lens. And the other thing that we do to start every show is a question of the day. Again, normally we're on in the afternoons. This is a difficult question. You can take a shot in the dark and try and get it, and we try and get an answer by the end of the show, and we got a prize, too. I'll tell you about it in a second. But get on the line right now, 312-981-7200, if you have any ideas to the answer to this. Of the 13 states that have this, Alaska has the most, and Pennsylvania has the least. Of the 13 states that have this, Alaska has the most. Pennsylvania has the least. 312-981-7200 for your guests, and we'll get started on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association, after this on WGN. Hey, everyone. Happy Saturday morning. We don't often say that on Let's Get Legal. It's 11:11. This is John Hansen. Yeah, we look at things from a legal lens on this program. It's powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. David Hochberg will be on with Home Sweet Home Chicago after Northwestern, about 2:15 or so, and it'll take you to 6 o'clock. But don't let that stop you from sending in pictures of your home foundation repairs. I'll ask the lawyers of Jonathan Merrill and Jeremy Geller what they think about it, and then we'll get the expert opinion coming in a little bit later on this afternoon. We're going to be talking about divorce and divorce after the age of 50, and the rates are skyrocketing for people. Even though divorce rates are actually going lower as a country on the whole, over 50 and over 65, we're seeing large increases. And every divorce is different, of course. That rhymed. Didn't intend to do it. But we're going to talk about what that means, why there are differences, and why what you should be wary of. And attorney Jeremy Geller will join us in the 11 o'clock hour. Look, I think we kind of know what to do. Like, if we get an fender bender, right? I think we all have a list of things that we've been told by our insurance company. But what if you're in an accident with an Uber driver? And or do you have to do anything there if you maybe think you might be hurt or maybe not? Or do you have to help out the Uber driver? There's a lot of questions people have about what if you're in a taxi cab? What if you're on a bus? What if the bus hits you? I mean, like, there's a lot of variables about if you're in different kinds of accidents. And attorney Jeremy Geller is going to break that down. And we'll also be talking in just a few moments with Ellen Heminger from MKFM Law, excuse me, to talk about the Brian Flores lawsuit, the former Miami Dolphins coach suing the NFL for discrimination for not getting a coaching job or other folks not getting coaching jobs as well. We'll break down how easy of a case that may be, or probably conversely, how difficult of a case that may be. We'll break into that a little bit later on. But our question of the day today is, of the 13 states that have this, Alaska has the most, Pennsylvania has the least. And we've had some great texts in on the line. 217 guest earthquakes, and I went ahead and looked up, and every state in the union has gotten an earthquake at some point. They say that Florida and North Dakota are the two states with the fewest earthquakes, according to the U.S. Geological Survey of Earthquake Information Center. So 312-91-7200, if you have a guess, and it can just be a wild guess that helps us get to the answer, you are going to win, if you get it right, a $50 gift card to the 50-50 Restaurant Group to be used at any one of their 14 fantastic establishments all over Chicago, including Roots Pizza and the 50-50 Sports Bar. We hope to get an answer by 11:45, because that's when we toss things over to Dave Ennett. If we don't, we carry it over to next week, and we've only had to do that a few times here on Let's Get Legal. But I think today is a difficult one. I will open it up to Kleppen and Andy Mazur. I don't know if you guys have any wild guesses for, of the 13 states that have this, Alaska has the most, Pennsylvania has the least. I don't know. If you really are confident, don't guess, because I'd rather have a caller get it. But do you have any wild guesses in the dark, Don or Andy?
Moose.
Moose. It's a great guess. I don't know. That's. I don't think there's. You're probably right that there's not that many states that have moose, right?
Good point, yeah.
You probably think the ones that, you know, are up to the north a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the answer. It's a great guess, though. Kleppen, any guesses?
Cruises.
Cruises. Interesting. Like, you think that maybe Pennsylvania as a Great Lake state border might have a couple cruises come in?
Just a few. One or two. And then I know I always hear everybody has such a great time on those Alaska cruises.
Oh, yeah. I really want to go on one of those.
Me too.
It's not the answer, though.
Oh, man.
So you don't get the gift card. I'm sorry, Kleppen. Let's go to Ed. Ed, you're on WGN. Ed, welcome to Let's Get Legal. What's your guess today?
My guess is Shoreline.
Shoreline. Great guess. Not the answer, my friend.
Not the answer.
Not the answer. You sound shocked.
Well, it was a wild guess.
It was a great one, Ed.
I'll keep listening.
Have a good one. Yeah, we appreciate that. No, it's not Shoreline. I often say on this program, I'm like, there's a chance that there are two answers, but that's not the one I'm looking for. I'll dive in to see if Ed had a second guess. Let's get Barbara on the line. Barbara, how are you doing on this Saturday morning?
I'm doing dandy. How are you?
Oh, gosh, more dandy now that you're doing dandy. Where are you calling from today?
Elmhurst.
Love. Hey, we just featured Elmhurst on Your Hometown. I had a great visit to the downtown area. It was wonderful. What's your guess, Barbara?
A sales tax.
Sales tax. Great guess. I think there's probably more than 13 states that have a sales tax, though. I don't know who has the highest or lowest. I'll try and get those answers for you, Barbara. That's not our answer to the question of the day, though.
Okey-doke.
Have a good one. Keep doing dandy, though, Barbara, even though you didn't win our prize. Let's go to Mary. Mary, you're on WGN. Mary, where are you calling from today?
Good morning. I'm calling from Wheeling.
Wheeling. Great. How's your morning going? Okay?
Good. Busy.
Yeah.
Busy morning.
There we go. What's your guess?
Eagles.
Great guess. Not the answer I'm looking for, though. I'm sorry, Mary.
It's okay. Good.
Yeah. Don't worry. I like that people take guesses. That's a good one. Let's go to Gloria. Gloria, I love that name. Where are you calling from today?
Elgin.
Gloria, what's your guess today?
Volcanoes?
Volcanoes. Interesting guess. Not the answer, though. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Have a good one. Yep. Let's go to Sheila. Sheila, you're on WGN. What's your guess, Sheila?
No fault divorce.
Are you guessing that because I have a divorce attorney coming on a little later?
Yes.
I love where your head's at, Sheila. That's not the guess, but I wish I could give you half the prize for being creative, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Have Bye-bye. A good one. Let's go to Lisa. Lisa, you're on WGN. Hey, Lisa.
Hey.
Go
ahead.
I was going to say, where are you calling from today?
Des Plaines.
All right, what's your guess?
I'm thinking either Indigenous Peoples or State Park.
I love that you snuck in two guesses there, Lisa.
Thank you.
Going a little counter to the rules there, Lisa. But no.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. Those are great guesses. The state parks, too, right? You'd think that, Alaska has a ton of them or has a lot of area. I think that most places have state parks, at least some state park. I don't know about Indigenous peoples. I imagine that nearly every state might have at least a few folks. I'll have to look at that up. That's not the answer, Lisa, but those are two great guesses, okay?
Okay, thank you. Have a good day.
Yeah, I will. Okay, this is a stumper. This one's going to be tough. Of the 13 states that have this, Alaska has the most, Pennsylvania has the least. We might be able to take a couple more guesses after this commercial break, but then Andy Mazur and I are going to chat a little bit about this Brian Flores situation, and we'll bring in a lawyer to give us a real expert opinion. We'll get to that after this here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association on WGN. 1021 here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Home sweet home Chicago. Normally now will be after Northwestern basketball around 2:15 or so. Our question of the day: of the 13 states that have this, Alaska has the most, Pennsylvania has the least. Let's go to Errol with our last guest here in this half hour. Errol, how are you doing this morning?
Very good, thank you.
What's your guess, my friend?
I think it's water frontage.
You mean like just
Alaska's got a lot of it, yeah, because of the water, Pacific Ocean and up north there, and I don't think Pennsylvania is very much.
It's a great guess, and there's a difference between coastline with the ocean and waterfront with lakes. Obviously, every state at least has one lake, so you're saying like coastline with a big body that connects to the ocean?
Yeah, the whole west part of Alaska is all ocean, and you get all those little fjords and so on and so forth.
It's a great guess. Tell you what, it's not our answer, but Errol, I looked it up. Of the states that have any coastline, there are 23 of them, not 13. Alaska is the most by a bunch, 6,600 miles of coastline. Florida comes in at second at 1,300. New Hampshire is 23rd at just 13 miles. So it's not the guess, but I appreciate your time, all right, Errol?
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
Hey, let's pivot a little bit, and I see the line still lighting up. The text line's going crazy. We'll have a little more time later on to try and get our question of the day answered. Andy Mazur, I just really wanted to ask you, you know, this Brian Flores story is huge. It's going to be, you know, it's nothing new in the NFL. We've heard reports of discrimination against coaches and plenty other, I mean, players, et cetera, et cetera. What is happening in this current situation? Who is Brian Flores for those that are just tuning into this, and what's happening?
Yeah, Brian Flores was the head coach of the Miami Dolphins and had put together back-to-back winning seasons and was let go this year by the Dolphins. And he is alleging a different type of racism as far as the Rooney Rule, which is set in the NFL, which teams with openings for head coaching are supposed to hire, supposed to at least interview one diverse candidate per opening.
Okay.
So that's not what this is really alleging at this point. What he's alleging is that there was not a, he was accused of not being collaborative with the team. The owner allegedly offered him $100,000 per loss to lose games to get a better draft selection a couple of years ago. And of course, he refused to do that because you're based on wins and losses. It doesn't matter if your pocketbook is lined because you're probably going to be without a job if you continue to do that. He was also accused by Stephen Ross, who is the owner of the Miami Dolphins, for Ross wanted him to kind of recruit Tom Brady back when he was a free agent. And you can't do that.
Right.
That's illegal. That's against the rules of the National Football League, where there's certain times of windows where you can talk to free agents, and there's certain windows where it's called tampering. So he decided that he couldn't do that. Now, as far as the Rooney Rule goes, he allegedly interviewed with the New York Giants. And if you believe Bill Belichick, who is the coach of the Patriots, who texted Brian.
The wrong Brian.
Unfortunately, not this Brian. He was trying to text Brian Daboll, who was the Bills offensive coordinator who ended up winning the job with the Giants, saying, congratulations, blah, blah, blah. You're going to be great in this job, blah, blah. But he texted Brian Flores, who was interviewing for the job the next day, and called it a sham interview because he says that the Giants already had their mind made up that they were going to have Brian Daboll as their head coach. So there's a lot to digest here because he's suing several teams, and he's suing the National Football League as well. It's a class action suit. And you know, he is alleging a lot of things with the Denver Broncos from a couple of years ago with John Elway, who was then the president of the Broncos.
So there's a lot going on here.
It's been, you know, the thing that I would ask your attorney.
Yeah, I'm going to bring her on right now, Ellen Heminger from MKFM Law. Ellen, how are you doing here today?
Great. How are you, John?
Great. We're just diving into this complicated case. And I guess, Andy, what's your first question then?
Well, my question would be, you know, when you approach a lawsuit like this that has not only effect on your immediate future, but your future beyond, as far as the NFL and coaching, I mean, you would think that you have to have a lot of evidence or at least a leg to stand on to go ahead and file a suit like this, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. And I think Brian Flores even spoke to the fact that he considered his future coaching career before filing this complaint and knew that by filing this complaint, he was taking a huge risk and that he may never be hired again with the NFL. So I completely agree with you. He obviously is approaching this complaint from a position of confidence that he will prevail if he is willing to sacrifice his entire career.
What is the burden of proof facing him? I mean, what does he have to prove in order to make this class action lawsuit successful in his mind?
You know, it's interesting because in 2020, so pretty recently, the Supreme Court issued a decision about these 1981 claims. And so if I can back up for a second.
Yeah, please do.
The federal law that this complaint is brought under is Section 1981 of the Civil Rights Act of 1866, which says all people have the same right to make and enforce contracts as enjoyed by white people. So it's entirely a race-based law. And under that law, Brian will have to show that his race was the only reason, what they call a but-for cause, that he was not hired for the job with the Giants or that he was subjected to these unequal terms of employment with the Miami Dolphins.
So you have to prove that you're just as...
very high standard.
Right, you have to prove you're just as qualified, and the only reason was because of that.
Right, exactly. And it's what they call a but-for standard. So but for his race, he would have received the job offer.
So it's a tough case.
It is. It absolutely is.
Is it unique that he sues multiple teams and then the NFL as a whole? I mean, these are individual companies. Does that play a role in this, too? Because, I mean, these are each individual companies making individual decisions. Obviously, they all come together as part of this league. Does that just add to the complication?
I don't necessarily know if it adds to the complication. Of course, by naming multiple defendants, it's going to be more complicated just, you know, with more people involved.
Right.
But I think it, you know, was a smart decision in the fact that it paints a larger picture of what was going on. It's not just the NFL as, you know, this big conglomerate organization. It's each individual team is engaging in racism, according to Brian Flores.
Right. You've worked for a long time in terms of employment law, cases of sexual harassment, retaliation, these sorts of things. I mean, is his case, obviously it's a big story, it's a big NFL story. Do you see cases similar to this in our everyday lives here in the Chicagoland area?
Absolutely. Of course, not to the scale that this case is on, but this case is no different than a lot of cases that are brought under Section 1981, specifically to do with race discrimination. And like Brian Flores, even if it's, you know, an individual plaintiff against an individual defendant, these cases are always difficult to prove in that, you know, the most common defense to these claims is that there was, you know, some other reason why, you know, the decision was made the way that it was. So in Brian Flores' case, it's likely that the NFL, the Dolphins, the Giants will all say that it didn't have to do with Brian Flores' race as to why he didn't get the job. Just, you know, Brian Daboll was better qualified and he just so happened to be white.
Right.
And so, of course, that's a difficult argument to overcome.
It sure is. Could this end up in a possible settlement, or do you think that Brian Flores is trying to make a statement here and he wants to see his date in court?
You know, I can't speak for what his attorneys and their legal strategy is to the case.
True.
But I, you know, this just by filing the complaint, it has already made a huge wave throughout the NFL. It's all over the media right now. So, you know, if it was just filed to make a statement, I think he's already accomplished that. But of course, I think it's much more than just making a statement. I think by the nature of bringing a class action, so it's not just Brian Flores filing the suit alone. He has a lot of other people who have tried to apply for jobs in the NFL or have been denied jobs or failure to being promoted in the NFL. A lot of people standing behind Brian right now saying he's not the only one who's experienced this and that the NFL has engaged in a pattern and practice of discriminating against black or minority candidates.
Andy, I know we got to get to the news, but you have a question before
I just wanted to point out, too, that the NFL commissioner, Roger Goodell, came out with a memo today. Now, it's kind of in contrast to what the memo that came out when Brian Flores first filed the lawsuit, when about 90 minutes later, the league said it had no merit.
Right.
Now he's saying that the commitment to diversity, equity and inclusion needs a lot of work. So it's just kind of interesting how that has kind of pivoted throughout this whole process.
Yeah, do public statements play any role in what could happen as this goes on, Ellen?
You know, it's nice that the NFL has changed their position a little bit. Of course, the public statement will not have any legal effect on the case, but, you know, it might be indicative that the NFL is taking these claims seriously, whether or not that means they are considering a settlement or other sort of resolution to the case besides going to trial. Of course, I can't speak to that.
Right.
But, you know, we do hear these statements oftentimes of companies pledging their commitment to diversity efforts and stuff like that. So, you know, it's nice to hear, but until it's backed up by some action, I don't know if it will have you know, really any effect on this case.
Right. Ellen Heminger, I hate to leave it at that, but we got to get going. Thanks for joining us today, okay?
Thank you for having me.
Great attorney from MKFM Law. More with Let's Get Legal coming up in a bit, but time for the news on WGN. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We welcome in Jonathan Merrill from the law offices of Jonathan Merrill. How are you doing, Jonathan?
I'm good, John. Thanks for having me.
Two Jonathans here, just sitting across from each other, names spelled the right way. It's nice to have another Jonathan in the room with me.
Great synergy already.
Exactly. ChicagoDivorce.com, by the way, as you listen to our conversation today, is the place to reach them. Boy, you guys are expanding, doing well, right?
Yeah, things are busy. We're growing. We're up to 16 lawyers, expanding our office space. So yeah, I can't complain. Things are good.
And while we're going to talk a lot about divorce today, it's family law. You cover a lot of different, the whole gambit of things, right?
Exactly. Most people think divorce when they think family law, but it's not just divorce. It's parentage issues, custody cases, prenups, postnups. So
a lot of things going on.
A lot of things.
Emotional things.
Very emotional things.
That must be tough, but also rewarding.
Yeah, I mean, that's what keeps me going, is that, you know, you're not just doing a business transaction, you're actually helping real people through real problems, and that makes it fulfilling.
For sure. 312-981-7200, by the way, Jonathan, can take some of your questions. I want to talk about what we call gray divorce. Now, I went a little gray at the age of 18, so I'm not disparaging anyone who's gray, and that's obviously what we call it, but that would be divorces over the age of 50, right? Or 65. There's two different distinctions.
Yeah, that area.
And while declining rates overall for divorces in the United States, what is happening to divorce rates of over 50 and over 65?
Those are actually increasing more, which, you know, people would kind of, you know, raise an eyebrow at that, but, you know, I think it's more of like a generational thing, mm-hmm. because a lot of the baby boomers who may have been divorced are on to marriage number two.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm seeing more of those people come in. It's kind of the second marriages that might be failing, in addition to those who remain married and, you know, just got divorced later in life. But yeah, there has been an uptick in the gray divorce, as they call it.
I think some of the stigma has gone away a little bit too, right? Even for people that have been married for 35 years, you know, if they're unhappy and they have plenty of life left to live, go live that life.
Exactly. Yeah, the stigma is definitely gone. I mean, you think, you know, 30, even 20 years ago, there was more of a stigma about getting divorced, and, you know, people were worried, how do I move on? And I just think society as a whole has changed, and outlook and the views on divorce have changed, and people are more empowered to, you know, get out of a bad situation and move on and enjoy the rest of their life.
Is there anything unique to know about divorce at a different age? I mean, obviously, it's a similar process, but maybe there's not, you know, the immediate kid custody situation going on. What's unique about that age?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when you're dealing with older people getting divorced, you know, the kids are usually grown. Or if it's a second marriage, they probably didn't have children together. So those issues aren't prevalent in these kind of divorces. And a lot of these divorces, you're actually dealing with people who got a prenup before they got married.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of the allocation of assets and issues of support might have been resolved by a document they entered into before.
Mm-hmm.
But the majority of the issues revolve around, you know, assets. And obviously, you know, the older you are, the more likely it is that you have substantial assets.
That's what I was going to say. When you get divorced at 25, you're splitting up not too much stuff, right?
Yeah, you're splitting up pennies.
But yeah,
yeah, obviously after, you know, people have gone through their career, or they're approaching retirement, definitely more substantial assets to resolve.
Yeah, exactly. What else? I mean, I know that it's a little bit more, let's say someone was the provider in the family and someone had raised the kids and maybe they really, maybe did some stuff on the side, but they may have to re-enter the workforce at a much older age. I mean, that's something to consider too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the idea behind maintenance, which is, you know, alimony. You know, people who, you know, didn't, you know, go through their career and stayed home to take care of kids while the other spouse went on and, you know, furthered their career, made a lot of money. That's why, you know, there's the idea of spousal support. So that person who gave up their career to maybe stay home, you know, is entitled to live a semblance of the same lifestyle they enjoyed during the marriage.
As we, and we can broaden this out really to any age, but talking about understanding finances, at what point in the consideration phase of getting a divorce, before or after talking to you, should people really start to analyze what their finances are, what their spouse's finances are, so they can make sure that that's all in order?
Yeah, I mean, that should be, look, if you know you're embarking on a divorce, knowing your finances is, you know, a great idea. And that's easier said than done for some people. Obviously, you know, the traditional idea is that one spouse kind of took care of the finances, the other one, you know, maybe took care of the children. So when you get to a divorce, especially after a long marriage, one spouse might be in completely in the dark regarding the finances.
Mm-hmm.
So it's difficult for that person. And they put a lot of trust in their attorney, obviously, to try to ascertain, excuse me, what the parties have, you know, what kind of income the other spouse have. So, I mean, obviously every situation is different, but you often encounter a spouse who is completely in the dark when it comes to finances, and it's the job of the lawyer, obviously, to put the pieces together.
Jonathan Merrill, we're talking with right now. You can go to chicagodivorce.com, because I imagine that, you know, with your continuing team and you're got a lot of, I mean, you guys know how to dig into finances, right? Like, you have, that's something you do not want to skimp on from a lawyer perspective. You want a team that knows how to tackle this.
Yeah, I mean, that's at the heart of a good divorce lawyer, is mm-hmm. knowing, you know, where to look for money, you know, how to put together a balance sheet that details all the assets that the parties have, knowing the strategy for getting the best division of the assets. That's central to being a good divorce attorney.
How does debt get divided between two people who are splitting up? We talk about assets a lot, but obviously a lot of folks, I don't know, whether it's mortgages or debt that they have outstanding. How does that work in Illinois?
Well, debt's divided equitably. So just like assets are divided equitably in Illinois, debts are addressed the same way.
Which doesn't mean 50-50.
Does not mean 50-50. It could mean 50-50, could. But it could definitely vary from that, depending on what a court believes is fair. So again, debts are treated the same way. Just like you have to divide up the assets, you have to divide up the debts. You know, oftentimes attorneys will work with the parties to try to pay off the debt that they have with the assets, so the parties can kind of leave on a clean slate and no one's carrying the debt that was incurred during the marriage. Sometimes it's not possible. So debt gets addressed, you know, really the same way as assets. You have to figure it out.
I'm also trying to think of other circumstances. Let's say you're over 50, or at any age, but you're under 65, so you haven't reached that Medicare stage yet. Health insurance is another consideration people have to take into account, right?
Huge issue. Yeah. I mean, especially if, you know, someone needs health insurance or not at that Medicare age, and that's a big expense. And, mm-hmm. you know, they're not allowed to, once there is actually a period of a couple years that you can remain on your spouse's policy.
Post-divorce,
but it's usually at a cost. And, you know, that's not going to last forever. So.
Can you ask your former spouse, can you write that in being like, he or she, they covered my health insurance. I need them to continue to do so.
You can. Yes. Well, by law, they have a right to stay on it. Who pays for it is a different story. Obviously, that figures into issues of how much support the spouse might be getting paid, or if that is a provision in the divorce decree on top of the spousal support. So, yeah, that becomes a big issue, because health insurance can be expensive, and, you know, they might have no other means to get it if they haven't worked for a while.
These rapid fire questions I'm asking you, is this often what you get from people that are about to enter this phase? Because I think a lot of people feel shame in being blind to how the process works. They shouldn't. That's what you're for.
That's what I'm here for. And, you know, we answer questions like this every day. So
yeah.
We're used to it. You know, questions coming at us about a million different things, different issues. Everyone's story's different. So, we like to say we've heard it all, but there's always something we haven't heard.
You must like when you get a new little challenge, right? Come on, that's fun for a lawyer.
Of course, of course.
Yeah, so you got something unique. You go to Jonathan Merrill, make sure, because he's looking for a challenge. Merrill Family Law, ChicagoDivorce.com. I got all that right, Jonathan, right?
You got it.
We're going to take a quick break. More with Jonathan after this on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association on WGN. This is normally the David Hochberg Home Sweet Home Show, Home Sweet Home Chicago, and people often text in. Feel free to text in your foundation or any repairs you need. I'm going to ask my lawyers their advice. Yes, we had that one you're looking at. Someone had a fracture in their sink. I'm trying to find the original text message. What does it say there? What are they looking for, Jonathan?
I think I'm looking at a drain here. It says, could you suggest someone we could contact to treat a hairline crack in our Corian sink?
All right, so you're looking at the picture. What are you seeing there in that sink? You got any advice for them?
Wow, I have trouble changing light bulbs, so I'm probably the last person in the world to answer, and I'm not even sure I see a crack in it.
Right.
I would just say, just replace the sink.
Jonathan Merrill's just like, throw it out. All right, so my advice to you, Rich, in Indian Head Park, Hochberg will be on at 2:15. Call into the show then when he's there. And all the way, also, by the way, why don't we get Mega Pros Joe to answer some lawyer questions later on, too?
Perfect.
We'll switch back and forth. We do have a lot of questions coming in about divorce. A little rapid fire here with you. In Illinois, is there a statute of limitations to collect unpaid child support?
There's not, but you're definitely better off doing it as soon as you can.
Does it get harder the further
out? It gets
out?
A little more difficult. You have a higher burden to reach. So there's technically not a statute of limitations, but it gets more difficult.
Is that something your office can handle?
Absolutely.
630 wants to know, what happens if your spouse has a credit card only in their name? They used it to get cash advances. Oh, no. That's never good. You're using your credit card to get cash advances, and here's the kicker, for a gambling habit.
Yeah.
Which is not good, but it happens to people. No judgment. I know that's a problem. So what if your spouse is dealing with that?
Definitely not a great thing to have going on. Of course, gambling problems lead to many divorces. And when people get divorced, if someone, you know, likes to gamble, oftentimes you'll see, you know, tons of ATM withdrawals or cash advances like this on a credit card. That falls under the realm of what's called dissipation.
It's okay.
Spending marital assets. For a non-marital purpose subsequent to the party's marriage breaking down. So if people are married to a gambling addict and, you know, there's a breakdown in the marriage and, you know, the money's flying out through the credit card.
Meaning you're going to get less and less after the settlement, in theory.
It's going to hurt the person who's doing it.
Right.
So
how do you get a court order to freeze assets that you have together? Or
that can absolutely happen. I mean, they're called temporary restraining orders, which are often initiated, you know, during the pendency of a case if someone's moving money around, spending money out of control, gambling. So, I mean, we've had, you know, orders entered that prohibit people from gambling, and we're, you know, sending subpoenas and orders to casinos locally that
really
prevent the person from gambling. So yeah, it can get deep, and obviously that's, you know, often a cause for divorce. Like,
well, then hang on, that person should reach out to you ASAP, right?
Absolutely. Wow. I mean, it's, you know, it's not a good situation to be going through, and it's usually the tip of the iceberg if you're starting to see it now.
Yeah. 815 wants to know, and this may seem like an obvious answer to some people, but I know that, you know, divorce has changed over the generations. They want to know, please ask your guest if someone can get divorced even if their spouse wants to stay married.
Sure. It's a good question. I've been asked that question before. The answer is you can't be forced to stay married to somebody. So if one person wants to get divorced, the other spouse is, you know, wants to stay together, unfortunately, the divorce is ultimately going to happen.
Right.
Now, the person who doesn't want it can take steps to delay it, but inevitably they're going to get divorced and the marriage will be dissolved.
I don't know if this is just anecdotal to people I know, and maybe we talked about that stigma going down, and people are able to just more freely talk about it within a marriage when it's breaking down. I'm hearing from a lot of folks that are, you know, amicable with the person they're breaking up with. I'm sure you've seen that a lot of times. And they're, you know, going to split things. They're okay with kind of taking it out of court. I forget what it's called, where they're coming to an agreement. But then they still reach out to a lawyer, right, to help navigate that. Mediation, what is that called?
Yeah. Well, mediation's one way to resolve a case. And the trend has been lately to, you know, not just go through mediation, but have an attorney assisting each party as they go through mediation. So you've got the neutral mediator, and you also have the parties who each have an attorney advising them throughout the mediation process. So, you know, lawyers are needed, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a divorce lawyer, but you want to do this right. And especially for, you know, people who have children or assets, you know, this is a one-time deal. So you want to make sure the papers are drafted properly, each party's being properly advised and counseled throughout the case. Obviously, you want to make sure issues regarding the children are resolved properly. So, you know, most people don't have a clue how to get divorced. That's why they go to an attorney.
A lot of great questions coming in. How do you handle, we only got about 30 seconds for this answer, how do you handle future educational expenses for the children in a divorce situation?
Sure. Well, there's a provision in the Illinois Dissolution of Marriage Act. that addresses payment of college education for children. And most times, you know, that issue of college expenses will be addressed in a divorce decree by basically saying, let's wait and see when the kids go to college. And mm-hmm. then if the parties can't resolve how to pay for college, the court can step in and determine based on the party's financial circumstances who should contribute what.
Yeah. The answer is to go to chicagodivorce.com. That leads you to the law offices of Jonathan Merrill. Jonathan, we're out of time, but great questions, and we hope to see you again soon, all right?
Thanks for having me, John. Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. All right, news next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Yes, this is Let's Get Legal, everyone. Home Sweet Home Chicago will be on after Northwestern basketball. We're taking it till the pregame here at 11:45. Thanks so much for listening on this Saturday morning. And you heard it right there. We're now joined by attorney Jeremy Geller from the Chicago law firm of Trapp and Geller, personal injury attorneys. Jeremy, thanks for hopping on with us here today.
Good to be here, John. Thanks for having me.
You love what you do, don't you?
I do love what I do. I love helping people out.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's what it's all about. I mean, people come to you maybe often after the worst day of their life or one of the worst days of their lives, not knowing what to do, and you navigate them through that process.
Absolutely. You know, I get calls from people who are really in trouble and worried, and my job is to help them feel comfortable through the process and make sure that they get what they need medically and monetarily for their injuries.
Not only what they need, but often, I mean, always, it's what they deserve.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's talk about, because I've teed this up, and you and I started talking during the commercial, and I'm like, we got to save this for on air because it's fascinating. What happens if you're in an accident? I know every accident is different and it's impossible to go through every scenario, but you were even telling me off the air that the things that you say to the other person are important. So walk us through a little bit of what the do's and don'ts are, I guess.
You know, I represent the injured people, okay, and oftentimes the other person could come up to my client and say, I'm so sorry, I didn't see you,
mm-hmm.
okay, and that statement is something that could be used against the other driver in court.
Regardless if a police officer's there to hear it or anything along those lines.
Indeed, okay, and it's what's called a statement against interest, and it's got a high level of reliability, so the courts allow those statements to be said in court, and it's important that on both ends that people know what to say and what not to say.
Right. And I mean, that's huge. Obviously, you know, you're fighting for people that may have been injured by that car. So you don't want to give away too many of the secrets. But I think even the injured person doesn't want to say, oh, I walked against the light. I know the signal wasn't there for me or whatever the case may be. So even things like that, stay away from any admission on the scene of the what happened.
Avoiding an admission is always good advice. Indeed. Yes.
That's got to be hard because I think some people genuinely feel guilt when something happens. But I think that there are examples where maybe you, let's say I'm in a car and I pull out in front of another vehicle and they hit me. And maybe in that moment I'm thinking, oh boy, I pulled in front of that car. That's my fault. But we don't know the circumstances. Maybe that car was going 25 miles over the limit, right? There are examples where even if you feel like you're guilty, you aren't.
Well, it's human nature. Sometimes you get into an accident and people go up to each other. Oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry. Are you okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you want to avoid saying, I'm so sorry. I didn't see you. Are you okay?
Right.
Okay. Because that I didn't see you or, oh, gosh, man, I thought I had enough speed to get through the intersection.
Right.
Those are the things that can be held against
I thought
you.
I had my turn signal on, but maybe I didn't. That's no good either.
Look, everything has exceptions, and there's ways to keep stuff in and keep stuff out of evidence.
Right.
And so that's what you're trying to avoid.
So what should you do if you are injured or you're in an accident? Like, what's the steps that you should go through?
If you are injured and you are in an accident, you want to make sure that the police show up to the scene. You want to get it documented on a police report, and then you want to get help. You want to call a lawyer because you want to get guided as to how you should handle the case. You do not want to speak to an insurance company. You do not want to give a statement to an insurance company.
Even your own insurance company.
Even if it's your own insurance company. Because if the other car that you're against does not have insurance, then your own insurance becomes the entity that you're going to try and get money from. Okay, and so you might think they're your insurance and they're there to
help
you.
They're in your corner, yeah.
But they become your adversary. Okay, and whatever you say to them, okay, will be used against you.
That is fascinating because you're right. I think that, and we see it by all the commercials that they're there with us, and we think, oh, they're going to be fighting that other guy and that insurance company for me, which they may if that other person has great insurance. But if not, we have no idea in those initial moments what has happened. So you just call them and let them know what's happened, or do you get the attorney first and you let them handle it?
best advice is you get an attorney, let the attorney do all the talking. Okay, let the attorney put your insurance on notice. Let the attorney put their insurance on notice. Let the attorney help you get your vehicle fixed, get a rental, and deal with all of that stuff that you don't know how to do right at the outset.
Even if, let's say you're in a situation where you don't, you have any doubt that you might have an injury, right? Because I think a lot of people experience things, they get in a car accident, they feel okay, and then it's a lingering thing, or it happens days or weeks later. I guess if there's any doubt, go that route.
If there is any doubt, get help and get advice.
By the way, I can't believe I said, if you're in any doubt, go that route. That was pretty good, Jeremy.
Yeah, that's a good line. We might use it, yeah.
Exactly. Okay, so call a lawyer. And what other things are you guys able to do? Not only you obviously contact insurance, but what sort of tools do you have that you might be able to FOIA, get information for, that the average Joe or John like me is not going to be able to do?
In today's technology day and age, there is often a video of an accident, whether it's somebody's Ring camera from their home, okay, a traffic light camera, police responding with a body worn camera. If you're able to get involved in the case early on, you can often preserve such evidence.
Because it gets deleted often.
It does get deleted. And, right. You know, whether it's having a good investigator go out and sort of canvas the area, talk to homeowners, talk to businesses to see if there's security cameras, Ring cameras, any type of closed circuit camera, and you can preserve that video. The amount of videos that you're able to get today that eliminate somebody else's, you know, version of the accident, very strong evidence. Very strong.
You know, often I'm in like neighborhood Facebook groups, and I'll often see someone say, I was in an accident. Does anyone have a Ring camera? I guess that's one way to go. But like, you want a lawyer on your side who knows the ways to actually get it, right?
Through FOIA, okay, through FEMA, okay, through Department of Homeland Security. There's a variety of different places that have cameras. And also on the vehicles themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Most modern vehicles, I think 2005 on forward, have some sort of black box type device. Mm-hmm. All commercial trucks have black boxes and GPS. And if you're able to get that box examined and the data pulled, you can find out the speed, the braking, what they call events that are recorded. And that's very important in establishing liability.
Does your advice in terms of like call a lawyer, don't make these statements, change at all? Or is it just your job changes if it's a truck that hits you, a bus, a city department bus? I mean, those are obviously different cases, but should everyone continue just to follow the exact same rules that we've outlined so far?
Yes, they should. Okay. Getting help right from the outset. Okay. If I get a case the day it happens or the day after it happens, my ability to get everything and help somebody is so much greater than if somebody calls a month, 2 months later, where they say, you know, my back was hurting. I waited a couple weeks. I wanted to see if it would get better. And now I have this lingering problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The medical is one element, okay, but establishing fault is always very important right from the get-go.
So follow the same rules. Reach out to you guys. Reach out to a lawyer. You know, obviously get the medical help you need. But then your job changes depending on if it's a truck, an Uber, a bus, right? I mean, those are complications or extenuated circumstances that you're dealing with, especially if you're dealing with a trucking company. They're going to have a billion lawyers on their side. You want one on your side, too.
Indeed. You know, big trucking companies with big insurance policies, they handle cases differently than, you know, somebody's personal vehicle with a smaller State Farm or an Allstate type thing locally.
All right. We're going to take a quick commercial break here, and we'll chat more about stuff. But in case anyone's leaving the car right now, traplaw.com. That's TRAPP law.com. That's where you want people to go, right?
Indeed.
Two P's and trap. Traplaw.com to reach Jeremy Geller and the folks over there at Trap and Geller. More after this here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association on WGN. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. It's 11:22 on this Saturday morning. Home Sweet Home Chicago after Northwestern basketball, which is what we're taking you up to at 11:45, the pregame show with Dave Ennett. Attorney Jeremy Geller, still here from the Chicago law firm Trapp and Geller, personal injury attorneys. And let's talk about uninsured motorist coverage. I want everyone today, your assignment, listeners, is to figure out exactly what sort of insurance you have. And what should they make sure that they have as part of that, Mr. Geller?
Great question. When people get insurance, okay, they get insurance thinking that they want to protect themselves in case they cause an accident with somebody else, in case somebody sues them. That's one element of it. But the more important element of insurance is underinsured or uninsured coverage. This is coverage that protects you, your children, your family, and anybody that lives with you from any accident that occurs in any way with a vehicle. So if you get into an accident with somebody and they cause it and they only have $25,000 of coverage or no coverage, you can utilize your own insurance policy to provide coverage for yourself and money for your injuries. If you get into an accident with a drunk driver who flees the scene, you can use your own policy. If you get into an accident with somebody, it's just a hit and run, you can use your own policy. If your kid is biking down the street, not in a car, and they get hit, you can use your own policy. If your kids are in somebody else's car, your neighbor's car, going to a soccer game, you can use your own coverage. So this is it's really the most powerful portion of insurance, and it's the reason we have it.
Is it on, like, if I look at my card that's sitting in my car, will it normally say that, or do I have to dive deep into the policy to look?
What's called your declarations page.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the first number is, let's say you have $25,000 over $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
The first number is what any one person can collect in an accident. The second number is what any one accident can pay out to everybody.
Okay.
Okay, so if there's 10 people hurt, the most that there is $50,000. So a lot of people have 25 over 50.
That doesn't sound like enough to me.
It's not enough.
Okay.
Okay. For 25 over 50, you might pay $1,000 a year. Okay. To get $250,000 over $500,000, you probably pay another $250 a year.
Total.
Total. For 10 times the amount of coverage.
So $10 a month, essentially. More, no, probably $15 to $20 more a month to get 10 times the coverage?
10 times the coverage. Okay. And it provides coverage to everybody in your house in any type of accident related to a vehicle. It's the reason that you have coverage. People often say, well, gosh, what else could I have done to get more money? This is the only thing that you could do to get more money.
Okay. All right, so that's the that's one line on the declaration page, and then the underinsured thing will be somewhere in there too?
Well, whatever the liability limits are, okay, that's how high your underinsured coverage could be.
Okay.
Okay, so underinsured is if the other guy has 25 and your injuries are beyond that, okay, that guy is underinsured to your injuries, so you can use the excess of yours. So if you've got $250,500 and he has 25, there's an additional $225,000 of coverage.
Okay, that makes sense to me.
If the other guy has none, then you use all of yours.
Okay. So best case scenario, look at that declarations page. Do it today. Call your agent if you need to on Monday or send them an email, right? Because we want to find out this answer.
If you're listening and you're driving right now and you're thinking, what can I do to protect myself and to protect my family in case anybody gets into an accident? It's to increase your underinsured, uninsured policy limits. Okay, you want $250,000 because that's what protects you in case something really happens.
Yeah. I think it's like most things. Everyone assumes nothing like that will happen to them, and they look at the prices and they go, oh, that one saves me a little money here, not realizing the drastic differences in coverage that happen.
And most commercial insurance companies will offer up to $1 million, okay? And it gets a little pricier the higher you go, but the more coverage you have, the more protection you have. And, you know, medical bills and injuries, those totals add up.
All right. Speaking about what's happening in courts, obviously we've had a couple of years of this COVID-19 pandemic. I think everyone's aware of that. Have you seen many trials? When are you getting back into the courtroom?
Well, you know, there were no trials for a while.
Right.
A good 16 months, the courts were closed for generally most trials.
Right.
At least civil trials. Recently, in October, the courts started rescheduling trials. I would say that since December, trials have been going on in Cook County at the Daly Center.
Is it a huge backlog people are working through?
It is a very large backlog. There are cases that were set before COVID began, and all of those cases got paused, and they're kind of trying their best to go chronologically, starting from the end, moving forward. So a lot of cases have been put on pause in that regard. Okay, I would say that now things are really starting to get back. My office, we have half a dozen trials that are now set and moving forward. But it was a challenging year for sure.
It's hard to do your job too, right? Like, you like to be in the room with people.
You know, being in the room, we did a lot of Zoom depositions and a lot of Zoom court, okay? And it moved cases forward, but the ability to look somebody in the eye when you ask them a pointed question, you know, to see them fidget, to see them not answer the question, you know, with confidence, you don't get that by being at home at your computer. You can't see their whole body. I kind of liken it to going to a concert, okay? You can listen to a song on the radio, but if you are at the concert, okay, there is a whole different live experience than being at home.
Yeah, and I imagine it's the same way for the jury too, right? They're going to be able to see things. If someone is lying on the stand or sneaking around the truth or whatever you want to say, there's certain body emotions that they do, and juries pick up on that sort of stuff.
Absolutely, and that's why we some attorneys had made a play for doing Zoom trials to keep the wheel turning, okay? But there is no replacement for live testimony and live jurors being able to just witness everything.
Yeah, for sure. No, you want to see that in person. All right, so who should be reaching out to you? Who do you help? Who should be memorizing your website?
We handle all injury cases, car accidents, slip and falls, medical malpractice, animal attacks, dog bites, workers' compensation, products liability. Any injury, you call me and we'll help you out.
Yeah, and I really just want to stress the importance of it. I know that, we always make jokes. There's lawyer jokes everywhere. It's not a joke, and like you told me on the air, until you need one. Someone like you representing me or anyone out there, I mean, you're fighting for what you deserve, right?
We're fighting for what you deserve, we're fighting for what you need, and we're fighting for what you don't even know exists. Okay? Mm-hmm. Some people call, and they're not sure, like this underinsured motorist coverage,
right.
Okay, medical benefits, okay, trying to do two things. One, maximize what you get on the case, and minimize what needs to be paid back, whether it's to health insurance, whether it's to workers' comp insurance, okay? Whoever covers the medical bills typically has a right to get money back, and a lawyer's job is to minimize that right of recovery so that the injured person gets the most for what they need.
For sure. All right, Jeremy Geller from Trapp & Geller, traplaw.com. That's TRAPP law.com. Trap with two P's, law.com. Jeremy, it's been great to chat with you.
John, appreciate it.
I didn't even get you to answer the sink question. We are out of time, so we'll have to rely on what Jonathan said earlier, or people can listen to David Hochberg a little later on. Have a good one, okay?
You take care.
All right, appreciate that. Time for the news on WGN. Well, I got about 7 minutes left here as we take you up to Northwestern basketball pregame with the incredible Dave Ennett. I was going to add another adjective there, Kleppen. I don't know. The incredibly honest and brave and amazing Dave Ennett.
Yes, the motivated.
The motivated. He is often very motivated.
Yeah.
He's a chipper guy, too.
He is. The energy, I don't know where it comes from.
I don't know either.
He's got one of those motors.
He's got one of those motors that I wish I had, right? I mean, I'll do any hour of the day and work hard, but he'll do the evening show, turn around, he'll be there with Surratt, no problem.
Yeah. Smile about it, too.
Let's just talk about Dave Ennett for the next 6 minutes, right into Dave Ennett.
Why not?
That'd be fun. Hey, 312-981-7200. We're still trying to get an answer to the question of the day. Of the 13 states that have this, Alaska has the most, Pennsylvania has the least. We'll try and get a couple more answers here. Let's go to Peter. Peter, you're on WGN. Where are you calling from, Peter?
Chicago, guys. And listen, I certainly agree with your words about Dave Ennett. He is the best.
Hey, there we go. Mark the timer rating. We're cutting that for a promo. Let's get that to Ernie ASAP. We agree with you, my friend. What's your guess here for the question?
My guess is the word glaciers.
Glaciers. Of the 13 states that have glaciers, Alaska has the most, Pennsylvania has the least. That's not the answer I'm looking for, but I guarantee Alaska's up on that list. I just don't know how many states have glaciers. But hey, thanks for calling, Peter.
Okay.
312-981-7200. We'll get to some more answers in just a moment. Don, I wanted to ask you, there's this story. I haven't heard much news about this sentencing phase for this ticket broker that was convicted last October, Bruce Lee. I heard about the story, right? This where he provided more than $100,000 to two White Sox ticket sellers in exchange for receiving complimentary and discounted game tickets that he would sell. You heard about the story, right,
yeah,
Don?
Absolutely. I remember the name, and he was convicted in October of 11 counts of wire fraud because he conspired with two White Sox employees in the box office, and he used that connection to get deeply discounted tickets or free ones on rainout days and stuff. And then he turned around and sold those at vastly inflated prices, back to regular consumers.
He made $868,369 by selling more than 34,000 tickets. And he's in the sentencing phase now. I was kind of surprised what federal prosecutors are asking for.
46 to 57 months.
That's a, that the, I mean, that's a lot. I guess that's still less than what they could have. I think he could have been
20 years. It says max sentence of 20 years in prison for each count, and he's facing 11 counts.
I don't know. I guess I don't know what the amount would be. I think they probably want some restitution as well.
That's what the Sox are hoping for. They want restitution from Lee. They said they're saying that the scheme, whatever he made, they're saying it cost the team over $1 million between 2016 and 2019.
And I had heard he had made the argument. Now, maybe this was in the sentencing process. I don't know if you heard about this, Don. The idea that, hey, look, I don't owe the White Sox $1 million. Yes, I've been convicted of fraudulently selling these tickets, making a profit. But those people entered the gates and then spent money that otherwise wouldn't have been spent,
yes,
like on concessions, right?
Absolutely. His attorney, I can't see the first name here,
yeah,
but Anishe Sanin, S-A-N-A-N. He says that they cited two studies which basically say that the average fan spends more than $200 on food and drinks and concessions when they attend a game. And the other study, that the White Sox fans drink more than any other team in baseball. So you take this lawyer takes those two studies and basically argues that this guy made the Sox money by bringing those people into the park.
They cited that study that we all were reading about White Sox fans drinking the most,
yes,
and that's what that was actually presented as evidence,
yes,
in,
right,
a federal court of law.
Exactly. That one, and then the $200 on food and drinks, whatnot. And he also says this lawyer said that the White Sox made at least $52,000 from Lee's ticket sales on StubHub specifically.
Okay, so interesting.
Right.
Are they trying to argue that he doesn't owe the White Sox as much, or are they trying to use that as leniency in the sentencing, or I guess maybe a little bit of both?
I think it's probably a little bit of both, basically just trying to skirt that the restitutions that the Sox are looking for, I would imagine. But I think that the only way they could really prove that would be if you went into the ticket sales, but the revenue the Sox generated from those games where he sold tickets, and then you could show what they actually did make from that. Just citing the two studies, to me, again, I have no expertise,
right,
at all, but I think citing the two studies feels like a little bit of a Hail Mary kind of an argument.
Yeah, I'd say so too. I remember when that study came out about White Sox drinkers. I think I read it. I don't think there was much science in the study. I think it was asking a couple people a few questions.
Some surveys of fans at the yes, games right then.
While they're tailgating,
right,
at 35th and Shields.
How much have you had today?
Exactly. All right, Don, thanks for the update
on
that.
Yeah, no problem.
Let's try and get an answer here before the end of the show. Let's go to Denise. Denise, you're on WGN. Denise, where are you calling from today?
From Mundelein.
Mundelein. All right. Of the 13 states that has this, Alaska has the most, Pennsylvania has the least. What's your guess?
It is the length of the border against Canada.
You are absolutely correct, Denise. I'm so glad we got a winner before the end of the show. You're going home with a $50 gift card to the 50-50 restaurant group to be used at any one of their 14 and fantastic establishments all over Chicago, including Roots Pizza and the 50-50 Sports Bar. 13 states either touch Canada, land to land, or have a water boundary with Canada. Pennsylvania treks in at 42 miles, a little sliver of a water boundary with Canada. Congratulations, Denise.
Oh, thanks, John. That's awesome.
Did you know that off the top of your head? Did you look it up?
Honestly, I looked it up. I didn't find the answer. So I thought mosquito size, I thought salmon, and I thought, no, Alaska's huge. What is unique?
Yeah.
And then it touches Canada.
There you go. Congrats, Denise. Stay on the line, all right? You'll talk to Aridian, all right?
Thanks, John.
Oh, I'm so glad we got an answer. Hey, next week, Let's Get Legal powered by the Illinois State Bar Association is from 3 to 6:30. Also on Monday, the start of Your Money Matters at 6 o'clock. Monday through Thursday, I'll be hosting that show, looking at everything from a financial perspective. It's going to be awesome. I cannot wait. I hope you'll join us. I hope you'll participate in the conversation. That's Monday through Thursday, 6 to 7 o'clock, and it starts on Monday. All right, so we've got Northwestern basketball in just a moment. And again, Home Sweet Home Chicago is going to be on at 2:15 after the game. But time for Northwestern basketball on WGN.